Hello and welcome to the actual 13th episode of the Foreign Podcast, not the one that came out last week that wasn't. This is the podcast that was. My name is Mike Bowden and I am coming to you from the second happiest country in the world.
Oh my life.
Pat, the second.
Say those, sir. I don't believe that.
The second happiest. Second only to the Finns, apparently.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I mean, is that really a country, Finland? But coming from a country that isn't even in the top 20.
Yeah, I did actually see. I saw it on Reddit. My name is Patrick Garrett.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and I'm.
And it's miserable where you are, even though the weather's
good. I recorded this in Montpellier in the south of France, where it's just. Just bloody awful, frankly.
It must be. Yeah, 24 degrees the other day. I saw it. Must be terrible.
Yeah. It's dropped back a little bit since then. But yeah, it's quite sunny. So yeah.
I mean, I know you feel that social sciences is just a complete waste of time and shouldn't even be a subject. And all these people just sort of skimming off the state, studying it and teaching it. But it is quite interesting. This Wellbeing Research Centre at the University of Oxford, which publishes the report, I'm reading from CNBC.com. I will put it in the blurb underneath this, says that in addition to using the Cantrell ladder, and I had to Google the Cantrell ladder, and that's basically is boiled down to, like, what do you think about this? One is worse, 10 is best. And it's kind of like a ladder system in terms of that. The report also considers the following six variables in more than 130 countries ranked in the report. It's GDP per capita, social support, healthy life expectancy, freedom, generosity, and freedom of corruption. And Denmark is number two. And interestingly, England, the UK, in fact, not England, the United Kingdom is 20th. And I really do think it's like surprising that France isn't in the top 20.
Doesn't feature. Yeah.
Like what is the problem in your country, Pat?
Not that it's a competition or anything.
No, like, no.
You know, I don't know. We've talked about it a lot. There's a lot of like social unrest, a lot of general problems with money and health, and you know, degradation and strikes and bloody blah.
Yeah,
I'm making it sound a lot worse than it actually is.
But the UK, though, I mean, the UK's
nuts. Beat because, France, yeah.
Because the UK is, like, as we both agree, a horrible place to live with horrible politicians and this horrible sort of divisive Brexit.
That's it.
And the French.
No, not even on the map, Mike.
But do you actually have, like, any kind of. Obviously, I know you've just said it, but. And you can think, obviously, which I'm sure you do, that the whole survey thing is bollocks. But do you think there is an actual? Is this because apparently it's actually done over an average over the last 3 years?
Because
if you look at it, it says Israel is number five.
Okay.
But the survey was actually taken on the 7th of October, which was before the current war. So you would think the Israelis right now probably wouldn't rank fifth, but it's taken on a 3 year average. Why do you think the French are so, like, maybe again compared to the UK,
there's really children living in poverty in
England, you know,
a lot of social problems, seriously. I mean, it's not basically, I think there's just a general sentiment that things are just getting worse. You know, the health system, the schooling system, the rail services. You know, the press is constantly full of anti-Macron sentiment.
Right.
The far right is becoming increasingly more popular, as we've spoken about like many times. And generally, there is a bit of a maxim in France that you know, the French people will moan about everything. And there's a definitely in the last sort of 10 years, I would say that, you know, there's been this sort of general Macronization of French society, and a lot of people really, really don't like it. And, you know, I'm not like, you know, I would love to say that I'm making this up or that, you know, I'm just sort of like randomly spouting shit, but there definitely is a feeling that things have got worse. The things that are, or, you know, not quite as good as they used to be, you know, in terms of things like just general stuff like education, the prices for tuition fees are going up,
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. It's just everything is, nothing's getting better, if you see what I mean. So so that may account for it. I don't know. But yeah, I don't, not sure how many like really, really happy French people I meet, obviously completely anecdotal, but I'm not sure I bump into like, I'm not sure I bump into like loads of French people that are just standing around, just like punching the air. Do you know what I mean?
And interestingly, as far as Denmark is concerned, the happiest demographic is like the like 55, 60 and over.
Shock.
Yeah, shock. Yeah. So the people have got all
the
money.
The rich people.
Yeah, people have got all the money and on their pensions and living the life. Yeah. They are more than content.
They're really
happy,
yeah.
But again, maybe, I don't know, you say shock, but I mean, if you ask British pensioners if they were happy with, you know, having to turn off all the heating in the winter and wear 5 cardigans, you know.
Yeah, but, maybe, yeah.
So, but anyway, that was just something that I thought was relevant. So we're going to basically talk about what we spoke about last time.
I'm pissed about that, Mike. I've got to be honest. Like, I'm pretty upset that we... What happened, dear listener?
You've got no idea about what pissed is, Pat. You've got no idea. I was incandescent.
I was using a bit of software to modify my voice, and it fucked my recording. So I sounded... It sounded like there was a really heavy noise gate on it, if you know what that is. So basically, I was cutting in and out, and there was nothing we could have done to rescue it, unfortunately. No. And that was a bit of a shame. So,
because actually, you know, your voice, you actually got sort of like a Mickey Mouse kind of pitch. It's only because you've got you've got all this stuff on that you sound so deep. You know,
there's nothing on it today.
But so. What we're going to do, we're going to read an email, or I am going to read an email. It would be a bit weird if we read it out together, from my colleague Rasmus. And he says, "Hello, Pat and Mike. I've been frequently listening to your podcast as the sole YouTube viewer listener since my dear colleague," I think that's me, "told me about it. My question is regarding your perspective on the education system you grew up with compared to the education system your kids are now experiencing. Is there any, or are there any interesting differences between the British and the French Danish system that you have experienced? As the perspective of someone from the outside, do you reckon there are some noteworthy issues or fields of improvements? And do you reckon the French or Danish system could learn anything from the British system you two grew up with?" The short answer to the last question is no.
It's a good question.
It's
a really good question. I mean, obviously, you know, I went to school in Britain, as Mike did. I was born in 1973, so I went to school in North Wales. I was born in Nottingham, and then I moved to North Wales. And obviously, like, since then, I didn't really have any experience of like higher education in Britain. I kind of did secondary school and GCSEs, and I did some A-levels, and I went to university for a bit and then left. So like all of my university education, I'm still doing it, has been in France. So really my sort of contacts with secondary education and like high school education, if you like, A-level education, or that level, it's called lycée in France, has been through my children. And just to answer the bit of the question that says, you know, how do we sort of feel about it? And, you know, it's, I mean, we talked about this last time in the great ruined episode disaster, was that the French education system, from my experience, has been like really pretty amazing. You know, we talked about pedagogy and how the general outlook for children is you know, there's this almost maternal or paternal element to French schools, where, you know, where if anything sort of untoward happens to a child, then it's immediately flagged. There's a huge amount of care that really wasn't wasn't applicable when I was at school. No.
It was very patriarchal. It wasn't pedagogical. Or maternal or paternal. It was patriarchal, yeah. Yeah. Mm. Survival of the fittest.
So where did you go to school, Mike?
Well, I went to a primary school local to me, and then when I was about, I think, 8 or 9, there was some kind of, I got into this sort of public school, kind of like what you see in the films, kind of like Hogwarts, but maybe not that, just sort of in that direction, you know, school uniforms, it had its own chapel, its own dining hall, the teachers wore gowns.
Fuck?
Yeah, you were sort of divided.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they had gowns. Yeah. I mean, not every day, but if there was some sort of maybe some sort of ceremonial sort of official thing, the teachers would have gowns on. Okay. Some teachers did walk around with them, but they had gowns. And again, there was this huge dining hall, and they had this sort of raised area at one end, and that's where all the teachers sort of sat. So, you know, then they can sort of see over all of us, like, mucking around. And, you know, I'd hear Bowden being shouted from, you know, up there, and you sort of, and he's, you know, and had his own chapel, his own swimming pool, cricket fields, football pitches, hockey pitches. It had a girls' school in it because, you know,
it's separated.
You could only have lessons with the girls, I think, from something like the third form. When you're about 12 or 13, you started to have mixed lessons with girls, but they had a sort of separate school for them. And, and for the most part, it was just really violent. You know, that's pretty what it was. It was being told what not to do. And, either threatening people with violence, being threatened with violence, or fighting.
And sounds awesome.
And and not a lot was sort of done about it. Boys will be boys, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
And I hated it. And I think I also hated it because many of the people who went there, because it wasn't a kind of a Hogwarts thing. It wasn't really kind of like the upper classes. It was more the sort of it was more Thatcher's children's children.
Okay.
So it was, you know, people who had the nouveau riche sort of to be maybe a little bit judgmental about it. It was the working class who suddenly had lots and lots of money through Thatcher's sort of tax breaks and stuff, and encouraging to start your own businesses and everything else. So tradesmen, pretty much their children, but they were sort of super rich. So it was very much their kind of, you know, there is something to do that, you know, there is a difference with the actual elite. You don't really talk about money, but maybe talking about money or showing off money is a bit sort of gauche. It's not really seen. But with this type class I went to, you know, your money, the clothes you wore, that was your whole status. That was everything. Mm-hmm. And so I just lived in a sort of just a normal kind of house in a sort of working class area. We're not working, sort of, yeah. Lower middle class area. And, you know, when I went to my friends' houses, we'd like drive out to the country and go down a lane, and there's this huge sort of like long house there with it's got its indoor swimming pool and everything else, and those were the sort of, you know, those were my friends. So in a way I didn't really sort of fit in anyway.
Okay.
I just didn't fit in there. And I think, you know, also, you know, I to the other ones, I must have really stuck out. Do you see what I mean? Because I just wasn't a part of their social class.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it was great. Loved it.
Sounds wicked. Yeah. Like, I went to a primary school in Grassford. Like I said, like Grassford is in North Wales. So it's it was a church school, actually. It was joined onto the church in Grassford, where Henry VIII's standard bearer is buried, Mike.
Wow.
There you go. And his grave is still there. And you can go and see that if you really, really want to.
Standard bearer, fantastic.
The church was just over the way from there. It's a really, really old church. I think it's like 12th century or something. And so we used to have to go to the church on So like on religious dates, like harvest festivals and blah blah blah, and the teachers were pretty religious. I mean, we were in North Wales, so we were in the 70s in that primary school, and you know there was a pretty sort of like heavy effect heavy bent on God. You know, there was quite a bit of God going on, and we had to sort of like did you have to pray in your assemblies and shit?
I mean, the school had its own chapel, so you had to go. Assembly was in chapel twice a week.
It was similar. We all had to sort of like line up in the hall and sort of like bow our heads and kneel on the floor and all that shit. And when we went to secondary school, I mean, it didn't really get. It was still pretty gaudy. It wasn't quite as gaudy as it was in primary school. But I went to a state secondary school in a village called Rosset, which is in North Wales. My mum and dad moved there when I was about 11. It was just down the road from Gresford. And it was similar. I mean, we had school uniforms. They were like class houses. I know that, you know, for people who live outside of Britain or have never really been there, that entire sort of school ethic, you know, can seem quite exotic. But I can assure you that it is not. it's just fucking horrible, basically. Like, and it's I had to wear a green uniform, we had to wear black trousers, and
can you not put that a picture of you up as the sort of episode?
I'll see if I can find one, and we can put that'd it on great. The on the podcast image. We had all of that, like cricket pitches, hockey pitches, football pitches. We had to play rugby, like, because we were in Wales, obviously. So like every winter we had to make us do things like dive into like snowy puddles and shit like that. Seriously, it was fucking crazy. Like, I'm not it wasn't that bad. I mean, it was sort of funny, but like it's like really, really on that sort of like borderline between like funny and like bullying. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't that amazing, I've got to be honest. So some of the teachers were really nice, and some of them were like really, really horrible. And
it's the same with me. I had some teachers that were sort of borderline bullies, or maybe just were bullies.
Yeah, it's just horrible. Yeah.
And if they didn't like you, that was it. They would bully you, and like they'd make all the other children laugh at you. You know,
that's it's really wicked. Yeah, obviously, didn't scar me at all. You know,
No. And had nothing to do with your respect for authority at all.
That's it.
Or mine, for that sake.
But it's. I mean, compared to my kids' education in France now, which is, I mean, they go to international sections in Montpellier, which is where we live, and they go to a college, which is a secondary school, which is called Simon V, and that's in a place called Alco in the northwest of Montpellier, and it used to be called Las Cas, which was a... It was literally 95% plus Maghrebi, so like people from Morocco and Algeria, and there was a huge push, quite a famous push in sort of like the education in the south of France to encourage people that weren't from North Africa to go there. So they introduced international sections, which were and sports sections as well. There are rugby sections there and stuff to encourage people from different backgrounds to go there to make it more mixed. It's called la mixité in French, to make sure that not everybody was from Arab states. So the international sections, like they have about half of their lessons are in English. There's actually a law in France now, which is why my daughter actually wasn't allowed to take Spanish for her, the equivalent of her A-level. They're called the SPE, special subjects. She wasn't allowed to choose Spanish because she's in the international section, it means that a lot of her lessons are in English.
Right.
If she'd have taken Spanish, then more than 50% of her lessons would have been in a non-French language, which is illegal. So just to, you know, just to hark back to what we talked about in the early episodes about, like, you know, how important the French language is to France as a sort of as an entity. It's really important. Like, literally, it's illegal to teach people in, you know, in a majority of any other language that isn't French. You have to have the majority of your schooling has to be in French.
Even if it's an international school.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
It's a legal thing. But I mean, like, you know, I don't want to, I mean, I've said this, you know, so like several times, I don't really want to like moan about the French education system too much because I mean, I'm sure maybe somebody that's lived here like all of their life and somebody that's I'm 50 years old, might have a sort of different opinion. might have a different opinion on it. But in terms of, you know, the French education system that I've seen is pretty astonishingly good, to be honest. Like, the teachers are absolutely amazing. Like, the teachers, the boys' teachers, the boys go to this college, Simon Veil, and my daughter, Meredith, she goes to a lycée, which is like the next bit high school in American, and called Jules Ged. And all of their teachers, I've never met any of their teachers that was bad. And they certainly don't get bullied by their teachers, Mike. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it would be, there'd be the same in Denmark. I mean, if that happened, you know, the teacher just would be fired. The end.
Yeah, exactly.
The kids would come home and tell the parents. The parents would phone the school and that teacher.
And that would be the end of it.
that would be the end of the discussion.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to, there was just a time when, my oldest son, Alexander, he had a bit of an issue with the teacher.
Okay.
And he felt maybe that he was either being picked on. It's many years ago now, probably about 10 years ago. Wow. But anyway, yeah, and we obviously sort of spoke to him about it. And what happened was that we came in and the teacher sat with us and with Alex and explained to us and, you know, really tried to sort it out. And the teacher, and it was genuine. The teacher was genuinely upset that Alex felt like he did and whatever. And it just got sorted out, basically. You know, it just wasn't an issue. But obviously, if Alex came home and said, well, this is still going on, you know, then we just would have gone to the headmaster and it would have been an issue. But yeah, from just what I hear, obviously, from, you know, my kids, the best thing I can say is, because in a way, I'm just echoing what you say, so I'm just going to try it in a couple of sentences. My kids enjoy going to school.
Mm-hmm.
They don't mind, you know, just like everyone in life, you know, no one wants to get up for work and no one wants to have to go to bed early because they've got to go to work, especially children. But, you know, I used to cry on weekends on a Sunday because I just did not want to go. Like, I hated it.
Yeah.
You know, my kids come home, you know, and I just get, yeah, what was school today? And, you know, because they're children, they don't remember anything. Oh, yeah, I can't remember. But they enjoy it. And they look forward to things. And sometimes if they've done something well at school, they'll come and they'll tell me about it. You know, they enjoy their school friends. You can see when you walk around the school that they, you know, high-five the teachers. It's a really good relationship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't have any of that.
No, it was a different time. Seriously, yeah. It's like that with my kids as well. You know, I say, so they get tired. I mean, I'll talk about this in a second, but like it's exactly the same. They come back and I say to them, you know, how did you get on today? You know, how was everything, et cetera, et cetera. And they're normally like, you know, it was pretty good. You know, they never really seem upset or they very rarely come back and sort of say, yeah, I had a bad day. It's pretty rare for that to happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, they do genuinely like school. There's no question about that. You know, they've got really good friends and, you know, they hang out with them in a really responsible way. And, you know, I just remember when I was a kid, I was just a fucking nutter basically. And, I definitely didn't have that same relationship with my school that they have now. And the one thing I will say about like about French education in general is it's really hard. It is tough. Like, and it's, like notoriously so. I mean, it's they really do expect you to kind of like work all the time, have a huge amount of holiday here, much more so than in Britain. Just to go back to Erasmus's question, the holidays here are absolutely enormous. I don't know if it's the same in Denmark. Do you have How much do you get for summer holiday in Denmark? Well,
I think the kids get like, I think it's eight weeks.
Yeah, I think we get 9-10 weeks.
Mm.
Something like that. And obviously in Britain, it's nowhere near that long. It's like shorter school days. 6 weeks. Yeah, exactly.
You see, when I went to my school, Forest School, which I'll talk about again in a minute so we can have a laugh at it, but I used to go to school on Saturdays.
Oh, my God, no. Yeah. Oh, no, that's horrible. So,
yeah, and because I was sort of a member of the football team and stuff, because usually everyone had to do kind of sports on a Monday and a Wednesday, and that would be, so half a day schooling, and then from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock, it was obligatory. It was either football, hockey, cricket, all those sort of things.
Mm.
But on Saturday, if you weren't a member, if you weren't like a member of any sort of school team, you could go home at 1. Oh, okay. I was a member of the school football team. So my Saturdays were also until sort of like 4 o'clock every Saturday. But that meant that we got like 9.5-10 weeks summer.
Oh, okay.
And we would get something like a month at Christmas, and we'd get like 2 weeks at Easter, but we'd have six days of schooling.
Okay. So, yeah, I think it's kind of a similar deal with sort of French students in general. I mean, like Meredith starts at like 8 a.m. and she'll regularly finish at sort of like, you know, between 5 and 6 o'clock at night. And they get 2 hours off for lunch.
Okay.
But it's pretty intense, definitely. Yeah, during the term days, times, yeah. We do, you know, term times of 12 weeks. And then, but like massive holidays, like for, yeah, they get 2 weeks off every 6 weeks. And okay. It's just normal Christmas holidays, like 2 weeks for Christmas. But like once you're in university, I mean, it's just party time, basically. Like they, you know, where they finish, like everything kind of finishes in May. I'm talking about like degree level.
Yeah.
Everything finishes in May and then doesn't start again until like September. So you get, you know, like 3+ months off.
Wow.
But yeah. But like, you know, in terms of the, you know, secondary education and stuff like that, even though it is, you know, pretty long for them, you know, I do feel for them sometimes. It is hard though. You know, they're pretty young. Like the boys are like 15 and Meredith's 17 or whatever. But yeah, they certainly have to do a lot of hours at school. Yeah, there's no question about that. Far more than I ever did. Bloody hell. I mean, it was like 9 till 3, 5 days a week. Or 9 till half 3, something like that.
Yeah, mine was, 8:45 until half 3, 4.
Okay.
5 days a week, and then 8:45 until 1. There's lessons time on a Saturday. But yeah, but the thing, I mean, there is a caveat to this whole discussion is that, you know, we don't know what modern schooling is like now in Britain.
No.
So this whole, because Denmark is also very big on what it's called a forældreinddragelse, which basically means that parents are kind of contacted a lot and kept up to date and know what's going on and everything else. What we were talking about before, this whole pedagogy and this sort of, pedagogical sort of approach to learning. And that might be the case now, Rasmus. Mm-hmm. You know, he's asking the question, but I just don't know. My brother has a son, Christopher, who is about 10, and it seems like, you know, he's gone to I think it's a Catholic school, and that's very God, from what I hear, Pat. I'm not going to say anything about it. Christopher seems to be okay. I mean, Christopher seems to be okay, but I just don't know enough to sort of start making assumptions about what it's like. But comparing it to when we went to school, I would say there is absolutely nothing that I would say the Danish system could learn from that.
No, I would say exactly the same about French schooling. The French schooling that I'm experiencing at the moment and have experienced for the last sort of 15 years is so much better I experienced when I was a child that it's pretty difficult to even compare it, to be honest.
I mean,
it's not the same thing, you know.
I mean, I can clearly remember getting bullied or something, or getting picked on, just as everybody else does at some stage. And then me maybe sort of fighting back, not fighting physically back, but verbally. And then a teacher asking what's going on. And then me or the other kid would explain. And if they thought what the kid was saying to me was funny, they'd just then end up join in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And so... and yeah, and you just have to deal with that, you know?
Yeah,
and that's just And I remember sitting next to someone who just gave me just constant dead arms.
Wicked.
Like a guy called Paul Hooper. He just kept on hitting me really hard. So, and he was physically stronger than me. And I just sort of started hitting him back. And it was just, you know, I just wanted to move. I just wanted to like move away from this person and just couldn't. And just the whole time just getting hit and punched. And I remember at primary school, because I wasn't wearing the right clothes, there's like these three kids just used to follow me around the playground. Basically just taking the piss out of the clothes I was wearing. And then if I turned round and sort of stuck up for myself, there's three of them. So they just beat me up.
Mm.
And then so you just had to live with these kids following you around almost every single break time, just taking the and again, that would just, and it really isn't me playing the violin. I'm just, it's just to sort of, because hopefully,
the way it was.
Yeah. It's just the way it was. And hopefully people listen to this, maybe who are, yeah, live in Denmark, or even people who go to, you know, got children who go to school today, you know, it's so much better now.
Yeah,
it really is.
It's
just so much better.
Yeah. I don't, like I said, any kind of sort of like bullying or violence or anything like that. I mean, there's been a huge push to get rid of it from French schools. There was a famous student rebellion in 1968 in France, where there was it was a borderline sort of revolt. And after that, a lot of things changed in the French education system. There was a thing called the Lycée Cassin. I mentioned it last time, which is basically there's a military aspect to it, because it was just like super strict and hyper national, and after that everything kind of started to get a bit more holistic, I would say, you know, a bit more caring in terms of like what actually happened to the children. And I mean, obviously, you know, there are European standards now that kind of make sure that, you know, things like that don't happen anymore. But if there's a sniff of violence, then, you know, there is immediate action,
yeah.
especially in France. I mean, there have been some really, I mean, I'm sure like everybody listening to this will, you know, will be abreast of sort of terrorist attacks in France, for example. There have been a number of attacks in France where teachers have been beheaded. I think it's happened a couple of times, I think.
Jesus.
And, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, do your kids have shooter drills?
The beheadings, there's no beheadings at our schools.
No.
Shooter drills, no, no.
Okay,
no,
our
like
kids
that.
Do.
Wow.
Yeah, okay, it's because they go to, because of where we are, and they go to, I think it's, I'm not sure if it's a national thing, actually, I don't know. But they have to practice, like, locking the rooms up and hiding under the desks and all of that. You know, banana. It's quite.
We have
quite,
that in the school,
American.
I think, but we don't have to practice it. It's there, and we're maybe told about it as teachers what to do if there's something, and there's an alarm, and there's these things.
Yeah.
It's all in place, but actually having a kind of trial runs of it.
No, they have to do stuff like that, because there have been it happened actually quite recently. I know, like this year in the in this school year, the one we're in now, when I was going to the university, I think it was at the end of last year. I mean, we had to, for at least a sort of like 2 or 3 months, we had to be searched basically every single time we went into the university. I had to show my card, my ID card, every single time I went in, because like a teacher was attacked. It's all to do with Islamism, basically. And It's just something that they kind of have to live with. Obviously, we didn't have like active shooter drills when I was in
but
school.
But didn't you do the whole
North
Chernobyl
Wales.
Stuff? Didn't you do the whole if there's a nuclear blast?
No.
No?
What did you have? What did you have to hide under a desk in that?
No, but I think it was spoken about at least. I do know in America they did, didn't they? In America, but that was in maybe the 60s or something. If it was like, you know. Hiding under the desk and stuff if there's a nuclear bomb. I'm pretty sure they did it in schools there. But I think after Chernobyl, there was a lot of talk about If there was any kind of, yeah.
I remember them talking about it a lot at school, but I don't think we ever actually did did any drills, you know, for, you know, so what would happen if anything actually did happen. But yeah, I know, like, the French schools here are very, very security focused. You know, there's not, you've got to show, I don't know, I really don't, I have no frame of reference for any other country as to whether or not it's like this anywhere else, but they have it's called a cahier de liaison, which is like a book that we sort of like use to talk to their teachers. You know, we can put notes in it and they can put notes in it.
Right, yeah. And they yeah, keep we've got Aula in Danish. Yeah.
Okay. But they have to show it to get in. Like they can't, if they don't have that book, they're not allowed in. And they're
wow, okay.
You can't just walk into the school. Like I can't just walk in, you know. I mean, you know, I have to go to the reception, and you know, and like in even at Meredith's Lycée, I mean, that's like locked. You can't go in there. Like, you know, it's a bit like I think it's kind of the same thinking about like locking sort of like pilots' cabins on planes kind of thing. It's just like you literally you're not allowed in. You have to present yourself and sort of say why you're there and what you're doing and so forth. And and yeah, I've no idea if it's like that in Denmark or in Britain.
Okay, that sounds
whatever,
really, really, really kind of like
it's pretty on top. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Mm. I've got a fun fact. I'm going to change the subject just to sort of round it off. I've got a fun fact about the school that I went to,
okay.
And to sort of, I think you'll like this better, just sort of how kind of snobby or pretend snob it was, because there's an area in London where I'm from, actually called Walthamstow.
I used to live there.
Did you?
Yeah, I lived in Walthamstow for years.
That's where I grew up, mate.
Serious? Oh, yeah, that's right. Fucking Tottenham, innit?
Tottenham, mate, innit? Yeah, I lived in Walthamstow for that until I was about, I think it was until from 75 to 81. And then we moved just a couple of miles down the road to South Woodford.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, but as you
lovely
know...
Lovely part of the world, Mike.
Yeah, lovely part of the world. Walthamstow... Yeah. Walthamstow is a very, very sort of maybe sort of working class area.
That's one way of putting it.
Yeah, that's a very
war
working
zone.
Class. Yeah.
And, no, it's not that bad. I'm taking the piss.
And well, there are actually nice areas in Walthamstow, but anyway, you know. And the school that I was in was also, because Walthamstow is a borough, right? It's a borough of Walthamstow. And the school that I'm in is in the borough of Walthamstow. The school that I went to as a child, this sort of posh Hogwarts-style school, is actually in the borough of Walthamstow. But just down the road from the school, like maybe a 10, 15-minute walk, is an area called Snaresbrook.
Okay.
And Snaresbrook is very leafy suburbia.
Okay.
Like three-story houses, two cars, BMWs parked outside. So when I went to the school, the address, right, if you were going to write to the school, or the actual official address was Forest School, and then it was, I think, yeah, I've actually looked it up now, it's Oakhurst Gardens, whatever, but then you had to write NR dot, which is near Snaresbrook. But then you'd have the E17, the Walthamstow postcode.
Yeah.
So it didn't want to sort of associate itself. And the funny thing is, when I Google it, if I Google my school, it says Forest School, Walthamstow. And on the sort of the Google page, it says again, Oakhurst Gardens, London E17. Forest School is a private day school in Walthamstow in the London borough of Waltham Forest. Sorry, it's the borough of Waltham Forest. That's right. It's not the borough of Walthamstow. Borough of Waltham Forest. Anyway, but when I go on the school's website and then go to contact, their address is Forest School, Snaresbrook, London, E17. But E17 is Walthamstow. It's just they still don't want to kind of associate themselves with the scum that is the sort of working class dregs from Walthamstow. And in a way, that kind of says it all about my schooling. That was the kind of idea it had of itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you want to, listener, Google it, it's true. It says Forest School Walthamstow on every kind of official thing, but on their own website, it's Forest School Snaresbrook. So, nice. But there you go.
It was all right down there. We lived in Leytonstone as well.
You lived in Leytonstone?
Yeah.
Just, you and David Beckham, mate, isn't it?
All right.
Beckham was from Leytonstone.
Is that true?
Yeah. Beckham was from Leytonstone. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Dave.
It was all right though. Like it was like, you know, like basically like when we moved to like Walthamstow in inverted commas, it was just around the corner. I mean, like it wasn't, you know, it was like 10 minutes away or something like that. That's walking, right, you know what I mean? It's all part of the same part of the world, but yeah.
It's pretty moody.
I didn't see many posh areas around there.
No.
Like
Did you not see Walthamstow Village? There's an area called Walthamstow Village.
I don't know.
Was actually, again, really nice, leafy, really good pubs, stuff like that.
Okay.
It wasn't just like the concrete jungle that the rest of the that the rest of Walthamstow was.
No, we just lived in a terraced house that was like sort of 20 minutes away from the tube kind of thing.
Right.
And they're right in the arse end of deepest Walthamstow. No, it wasn't.
The longest single market in Europe.
Oh, really?
As in like market stalls, people, market trading, not like, you know, like a sort of financial market. Yeah, it had the longest market. I don't know if it's still the case, but the Walthamstow market was the longest market in Europe. And there's a very famous English designer was born, and I've forgotten his name now, comes from Walthamstow as well.
It was nothing like where I went to school. Was really nothing like that because we went to school like right out in the country. So yeah, there were private schools there, but they were kind of in Chester, and you know, which was about, you know, I grew up in kind of right on the border between England and Wales. And yeah, it was it had a really really large catchment area, you know. Obviously a lot of schools got shut down, and you know, it was surrounded by like coal pits, and you know, I don't think anybody was pretending that it was there was anything other than what it was. It's still there. I mean, it's a really major school now. I mean, it's massive.
Rasmus, we've answered your question, I think. I hope that was a good answer, and you know, now you know, or everyone knows about Pat living in the middle of nowhere, basically.
Yeah.
And me living in a concrete jungle, and our school days pretty much the same.
Yeah,
really.
And I think it was of its time, like I said. I mean, it's interesting that you're saying that, like, Danish education, there's a lot of similarities with French education, I think.
I think there is.
So, like, undoubtedly, I assume that British schools are probably a bit more like that now, you know, I would hope.
Yeah, I would hope so too. But, I mean, my brother is a teacher's assistant.
Okay.
And they weren't around when I, you know, we just mucked around and just destroyed any kind of way a teacher could teach. But now there's actually someone in, you know, there's someone else extra in the class to keep children like me quiet, so the teacher can actually do their job. And that's a positive thing for everyone. But anyway, Pat, let's hope this one gets out.
I'm crossing my fingers. I'm looking at the waveform in Audition Mic, and it's looking nice and fat. It should be all right this time, I think.
And it's quite fun. It's quite ironic, that you mentioned God so much at the school, because, you know, this is coming out on Easter Monday.
Woo!
So, you know.
And, Praise be to Jesus.
And this is actually a bank holiday in Denmark, because they kind of celebrate the Last Supper.
Okay.
So this is actually a national holiday, and tomorrow, and obviously Monday.
Yeah, we don't get Good Friday. So, like, unfortunately, it's just a normal working day.
Wow.
And
what sort of fascist state do you have? What's going on?
I have no idea what that's about. But yeah, it's a Catholic state.
That's why they're so unhappy, Pat. That's it. But anyway, everyone, thanks for listening. And it's good to be back. And we'll probably see you talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Yep. Many thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.